You may have heard the saying, finding your why. It's the why that has driven Nate Sangmani from his namesake, a refugee camp in Thailand, to doing the Nate pose on the top of some of California's most scenic bluffs. He came up during Sacramento's turbulent 1990s, and after an encounter with the criminal justice system, Nate made a choice in life by finding his why. Nate's why is to leave a positive impact on individuals, his family, the Lao community, and beyond. His life has taken him on a journey of entrepreneurism, coaching, philanthropy, and even to inventing his own fitness program, Hike and Hit. Hey, Nate.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's going on, Nate? How you doing?
Good. All right, how are you guys?
All right, good, good.
Yeah.
So, you ready for the winter time or something?
Man, it's, it's cold.
Where are you from?
Sacramento.
Oh, man, it'd be nice and warm.
It's cold. It's in the valley, so it's cold. It's cold in the evenings.
Is it?
Cold in the evenings and hot in the days, you know what I mean? So you got to be prepared for all four seasons.
Yeah, I hear you on that one.
Well, I grew up out there. Now I live in Chicago where Co lives here, man. That isn't cold. We had 17 degrees this morning, and that's not even that bad yet. So
is that what it is right now?
Here outside, yeah. Brutal, yeah. Man. Well, cool. Yeah. Well, hey, Nate, man, thanks for joining us because we're really excited about what you're doing. You're doing something really positive and something unique. So Co's going to go ahead and kick off the show here, and we'll get right into it.
Sounds good. Let's go.
Hey, welcome everybody to another episode of C4 Podcast, Southeast Asian Athletes Achievement Through Adversity. If you haven't already, please like and share our page. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, Lao American Sports. The website is also laoamericansports.com. So go check us out, give us a follow, and tell all your friends about it. We have an amazing guest today. I'm going to let my co-host, John Messina, introduce him. So I think you guys really enjoy this episode. John?
Yeah, so today we have Panat Nate Sangmani. And what's really cool about your story is we had a lot of positive feedback when we covered some new sports, pickleball, disc golf, cornhole with some professional players in those sports. But even better is you're kind of inventing your own thing. And it's really cool. But more than that, you have a really cool story like a lot of our guests. And we just like to start at the beginning to kind of frame the whole conversation. And then we'll jump into what the cool things you're doing right now, Nate. So, you know, your family comes out of Laos. Tell us a little bit about the immigration story because a lot of listeners can relate. And we'll start from there.
Like you said, a lot of other people can relate. But before we get started, I do want to say thank you for having me. Secondly, for, you know, creating a platform like this to really highlight and showcase a lot of the stuff that Lao Americans are doing. I think it's, you know, it's time, right? It's time we've put in a lot of work, a lot of talent out there that has not been seen. And so I really, really appreciate what you guys are doing. And it's an honor to be on here. So with that being said, yes, my story is very relatable to a lot of Southeast Asians out there, specifically Lao immigrants. You know, family from the village of Don Kamau in the south Laos, all the way on the Cambodian border. Yeah, so, you know, my parents, you know, my dad passed back in 2017, but, you know, my mom and dad, they didn't talk about it much, very, very little details. But so, you know, I've kind of had to hear their story from relatives or from other people that experienced a similar thing. So, and I've asked my mom to this day, and she's still just kind of very, you know, I don't know if shy is a word, but she kind of just brushes it off. But the information that I've gathered, you know, is with 3 month trek on foot all the way to Thailand. And then that's when we were put in Panat Nakhom, one of the refugee camps. And that's how I got my first name, Panat. So, you know, my dad was not creative at all. And so he was like, I'm just going to name you wherever you're born. when we got here to the States, I had a younger brother born here in Sacramento. He wanted to name him Sacramento. Everybody's like, no, name him after the city. So, So that's honestly most of the information I got there. And then, you know, I don't know if we were sponsored. I'm going to assume we were, and how exactly we got here. But again, the stories my mom tells very, very vague. So I've just been having to pick up pieces here and there. And I'm hoping as she gets older, she'll want to share more so that I can, you know, pass those stories down. So
you were born in Thailand, right? And the capital.
Correct. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the stigma that we want to make aware, and our elders, right? They don't want to talk about it. It's probably very hard and difficult time. But my thing is, again, having something like this type of platform, it gives us a chance to open up and talk about it. And like, I'm sure everybody went through the same horrors, some worse than others. But the time, keeping quiet about it and keep it inside, that's something we need to overcome. You know, that's one of my goals, John and I's goals on having this, you know, channel, is to, you know, let people tell their stories and for other people to hear and say, hey, we kind of went through the similar thing. You know, we weren't alone, right?
Yeah. I love it. And I think it needs to be heard. But you know, it is a delicate, you know, topic. There's mm-hmm. a balance of like how much to push. Cause it's their trauma, you know? And so,
yeah.
But I agree, you know, that's why I said, I'm hopeful that, you know, down the line, she'll put some of those guards down and open up. And so, just living here in the States, I've seen her transgression in terms of how she's grown, you know what I mean? From, some of the boundaries and stuff that she had as a kid to now being able to open up. And then you see all the OGs now that have Facebook and are like FaceTiming each other. It's like, it's good to see them opening up and, you know, breaking out some of those barriers that they had, you know, growing up.
Yeah, for sure. My mother-in-law is out of control on Facebook. So, well, Nate, you grew up in Sacramento. You had a special influence in your life with a godmother named Paula. So kind of tell us about those early years and that and how that impacted you.
That's something that's also, I wouldn't say it's kind of blurry. Not blurry that I don't recall a lot of things, but she was the manager of our apartment complex. And what's really interesting about my story specifically is when a lot of ethnic cultures are come over to the States, they kind of stay in the same, like, you know, the same neighborhood, right? The same apartment complex. So they can kind of all just, relate, get acclimated here and things of that nature. For some reason, we were in a totally different apartment complex with no other Lao folks. But Paula took us in. And then as I'm putting pieces back together as I'm older now, I'm realizing I think she was a teacher because she had me signed up. She would always take us to the bank, and it was always school's first financial credit union. And as I got older, I learned that only teachers could have an account there. So I was like, okay, she must have been a teacher. But you know, she took my family in, and she would take my older aunts out and do things, but they didn't live in that apartment complex, so we did. So I said 3 out of the 4 nights, me and my brother Paul, that she wanted to, my dad wanted to name Sacramento, she would take us in, take us to church, take us to the Buddhist temple. She'd have Mormons over, we go to the Mormon church. She'd have Jehovah Witnesses over. So she really just wanted us to see the different religions and, you know, be open minded, you know. But in that moment, you know, as a kid, I was just like, you know, okay, what's going on? I don't know any of this. And then she got us into martial arts, got us into sports. We're doing a lot of volunteer work. I think she knew her time was limited. I vividly recall when I was in the 6th grade, my mom picking me up and saying, hey, Paula passed away today. And because of all the stuff that she had us doing, I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to do any more of that work, you know. But in hindsight, you know, it's like, wow, that was truly, truly a blessing. And I definitely like dedicate almost the rest of my life in honoring what she did for me and the stuff that she instilled in me. And so, it was very unique and rare. So that's pretty much been my life purpose, is everything that she's instilled in me is to be able to provide it for others. And so, how she just took in a Lao family, you know what I mean? Again, to my knowledge, you know, not asking for it, you know what I mean? She had no kids of her own. So,
you know, coming to the States, I was 4 years old, and I kind of experienced the same thing with my family. We had our sponsors, and I went to a Lutheran school, you know, Christian. And I was confused, man, learning about that. And then back home, my dad's like, no, you're Buddhist. And then I go into school, you know, and they're teaching me about Jesus and the cross and some of the songs, right? Like, I just thought the songs were songs, man. I didn't even know they had no meaning, right? Because I'm barely learning English, right? And I just like the melody and stuff. So I was just kind of going along with it. But, you know, I didn't realize how much it affected me as I got older. I was like, man, who am I? You know, and in one way, I felt guilty that if I did this, I'm betraying my dad and the Buddhist culture. And then the other hand, like, man, these people are doing it, you know, out of their love to support us, you know, and they just want to teach us, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think in any way they're like, you know, this guy's Buddhist and I'm going to make him into a Christian. They just wanted to show their world, you know. So at some point, man, I was confused and I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was.
Well, it looks like you're pretty confident who you are now. So that's
it's taken a while.
Took almost 50 years, but you just figured it out, right?
Yeah, 50 years. I got another 50 to go, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, you
that's
do.
Cool. Well, Nate, you know, I grew up in the Sacramento area. We've had several guests on from both Sacramento, Stockton, Fresno, that whole Northern California region. And it's kind of a recurring theme of a lot of people. It was a pretty bad environment in the 90s, right? Just be real about it with the gangs and the problems that were going on in that area at the time. So a lot of folks ended up getting in trouble or finding ways to steer clear of that influence. So you found yourself in a little bit of trouble. Tell us about that and the impact it had on your family.
Yeah, being the oldest, a lot of similar stories, having to be the voice for the family, right? Having to read all the mail, remember all the streets so, you know, you can navigate where we're going and translate and things of that nature. So, you know, a lot was put on my shoulders, you know, and I, you know, through Paula, I had learned a lot. I was, you know, looking back on it, I was, you know, further ahead than some of my friends or, you know, relatives and things of that nature. My childhood, you know, having to do volunteer work, working, you know, the whole week, going to church on Sunday. When Paula finally passed, it was kind of like, ooh, I can do what all the other loud kids are doing, right? I can go hang out and things of that nature. And like you said, it wasn't a lot of good things going on. The one thing that, you know, we all related to was playing sports. You know, we'd make our own baseball field. We'd play basketball. You know, we played faith all, you know, and just all these sports. But then going to school, you know, we'd get picked on. You know, we were new to the country. We were the Asians. You know, they didn't know what kind of Asian. So we were being called every Asian under the sun and made fun of from, you know, all the other ethnic groups that have been here already. And so you dealt with that. And that's how, you know, a lot of gangs formed. And so, you know, got involved in that. And, you know, at 17, like I swear, like November 17th, like maybe like a couple of days ago when I was 17, you know, 30 years ago. Right before I turned 18, was hanging out with the wrong crowd, drinking in public outside of a pool hall. And then, you know, I was hanging out with some people that were some of America's top most wanted, you know, top 10. And so they were coming for them and they get away. They get me and they're trying to press me. But, you know, they arrest me for being drunk in public. And they keep me overnight trying to press me for information. And then, so, you know, I get home and my dad leaves this letter written in Lao saying, you know, I've gone through all this to come to this country to provide for my family, a better place for my family, better opportunities for my family. My eldest here, you know, goes and messes it all up. So he writes a suicide letter in Lao and we can't find him for like, you know, 3 days. And so in that moment, that's when everything that Paula had taught me and instilled in me just kind of kicked in. And I was like, hey, you got to change. You got to do something different. And, you know, and again, I was coming of age, right? I was becoming 18 and gone through puberty and everything. And so that was it. That was when I decided, like, okay, I'm going to take everything I've learned through all the religions that I've learned, all the volunteer work that I've done, and I'm going to start with my community. You know, I'm going to start with my Lao community because, you know, they're the ones that are so talented, you know, but getting in trouble. And then I'm going to go from starting from my Lao community to my actual community, you know, of Del Paso Heights here in Sacramento. And so, So that's where the dream started. And, you know, it's a long-term dream. It, you know, initially it was overnight. I wanted to get it right away, like most people, right? I want to build this platform so we can provide all this stuff for all the Lao kids. And then all the people in my community that I love. And then, you know, as I got older, as you get wiser, you understand that it's a day by day process and it's long-term. And, you know, you're going to plant seeds that you don't sit under the shade of, you know what I mean? When the tree blooms. And so that's been the mindset ever since. It's been honoring my godmother, honoring my dad. And that's going to be my mission until the day I die. So.
That's amazing that you had that vision for what, almost 30 years now.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. And yeah, it's not an overnight thing, you know, especially hard. And I've looked around, I've noticed our community isn't as tight or isn't as united as other communities. Why, I don't know, but I think hopefully, you know, our platform and meeting people like you and you telling your story, that it'll inspire others to like, man, we need to create our own, and we haven't, you know. It just seems like we've been having an eternal battle amongst, mm-hmm. you know, amongst us. And it's always like, it's like amongst the classes, right? Mm-hmm. We're the same people, but now we got to divide, and like this class is better than that class. And, you know, that's tough, but man, I'm glad you're keeping going. I'm going to keep going with it. If you're comfortable enough in saying, how did you end up finding your father?
He reappeared. Okay. So yeah, he reappeared. And you know, we had a talk, and you know, which was odd, because you know, back, you know, you don't really talk. You either got, mm-hmm. you got whooped, or you know, and you got told what to do. But you know, we talked, and I was like, you know, I was like, hey, my fault, my apology. I'm sorry. I know you raised me to be a better man, and I'm here for it. So I said I'm gonna get two jobs in a year and a half. I'm gonna buy us our first house, and I'm gonna get us out of here. And that's what I did. I put my head down and just worked, and bought our first house. And you know, and then yeah, started building and creating from there to show others how to do it. And so, I think we were in a really you know, growing up in the 90s, like, I think it's such a special moment because the internet was born, right? So we're able to like know what it's like pre-internet, and then but then utilize it as well to our strength. And like right when like MySpace was really kicking off, and then Facebook was kicking off, is when I realized it is not going to be an overnight thing. Like what I realized about our people, like you said, we're always clashing internally, you know. And I was fortunate enough to have that vision early, like they want to see it first, and they want to see it long term, and then that's how you create influence. They see it, and then they can then let them inquire. You know, don't come out like, oh, you should be doing this, we should be doing this. It's like be that light and have them come inquire, because then they're intrigued, and then that's where you can kind of plant seeds. Like, yeah, you know, you could do it too, or we could do it together, or you know, things of that nature. And so, that's how I've always kind of just used my platform, is just to be an example and try to be the best example, be the best person I could be, and you know, hopefully that light works like a you know, like a siren to call other people in and have them inquire. And so you know, that's been my mission. At the same time, I have some very intentional plans as well, and intentional goals of how I can, you know, be aggressive with the impact. But overall, just be a light, be a beacon to call them in, have them inquire. And I think it's working on multiple platforms, you know, and it's ripple effects. And so, but yeah, to your point, a lot of internal conflict, a lot of, you know, skepticism. They don't want to buy in right away. You know, I've tried to think about why it is that we don't get along, and then, you know, it caused me a headache. I was like, you know, I'm not going to think about it anymore. I'm just going to go out and be, you know, be positive, be energetic, and you know, be motivating. And you know, if people want to still have internal battles, that's on them. I'm not going to put my energy into that.
Yeah, I scratched my head on that too. You know, thinking, gosh, you know, our culture, the Buddhist culture, you would think that faith would be very high up there, right? And you mentioned the skepticism and all that. And it could be the trauma that they faced during those 3 months leaving a land that they grew in and to start all over, and the fear of coming to the U.S. and not, you know, I mean, it could stem from that. We don't know because we weren't them, right? But right now I think people are starting to open up their eyes and see, you know, people need to lead the way. There needs to be a group of us that leads the way and like, okay, all right. You know, like, hey, yeah. This is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you first thanked us for bringing it up, you know, up this platform, John and I, we're just sitting around at a Starbucks, you know, coffee, and man, why don't we do this? And like, I'm very happy with the response. Of course, we always want more and, you know, more of a following, right? But very happy with the response, especially from the guests. And they mentioned the same thing, just being happy that there's a platform to share their stories. So
yeah, for sure. And it's one ripple at a time, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the grand vision is the hope that, you know, it grows into this thing that impacts a lot of lives, but at the same time, the balance of making sure that we're present, that we impact the one life that we're involved with today, you know, whether for me, it's making sure I impact, you know, you, Cole, and you, John, and vice versa. And hoping that just grows organically. Right. But being ambitious and competitive as we are, we can lose sight of that and work excessively hard to make it grow. Which then in turn causes us to lose why we started it. And so that I'm always mindful of that when I start a new endeavor, it's like, hey, we got to have our core values, our core, you know, fundamentals, and make sure all our moves, you know, coincide with our why, our mission statement. If it doesn't, then we need to pause, you know, recalibrate, and change up the decision-making. So yeah, I appreciate what you guys do with the platform.
Yeah.
And so how I view it is like, there's a bunch of chess boards all across the country, right, all across the world, and each chess board has his king, and each king is doing their thing on their chess board, and you know, in God's timing, he's gonna bring all those kings together to be able to celebrate and rejoice, like, hey, you guys did it, you guys brought together the people and like really showed the world who we are, what we're capable of. And so, but in the meantime, we all got our chess boards in our little area and making our moves and building our empires, you know.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, you've got your fingers in a lot of things. And before we get into Hike and Hit, because we want to spend some time on Hike and Hit, tell us what you did after high school. You're DJing, Cloud9 clothing. I mean, you got your fingers in so many things, Nate. Just kind of walk us through a lot of that stuff you did.
Yeah. You know, I'm a firm believer knowing your why, right? Not everyone knows their why. Not everyone can find their why. Some people struggle with it and they stress on it. And again, having the upbringing of the challenges and the struggle kind of fast forwarded me, you know, to the point where I had to know my why, right? You know, with Paula being around and in passing, and then me letting my dad down. And so DJing started from just the place of like, you know, so being the oldest, you just innately want to please your parents, right? You know, more so than your siblings. I mean, I'm sure all kids want to make their parents proud, right? So you have that. So I'm always doing things to make them proud. And then started DJing music, you know, CDs was out, you know, and just wanting from a genuine place to, because I was fortunate enough because I worked with my dad, you know, and I saved up money. So I'd buy all the CDs. I'd have all the new albums that were out and new singles. And so we'd have parties and I'd have all the CDs. So I'd be playing music and stuff like that. And it just felt good to bring light to people, you know, that didn't have the same resources. And so I was like, man, like, could I DJ? Could I be a DJ and like, you know, make people feel good, get them on a dance floor, play hits for them and stuff like that. And so it just came from a place that wanting to see others happy and give them a good time. And so, you know, started saving up, investing in DJ equipment. And then, you know, was getting booked for various parties, house parties and all this stuff. And so decided to start a company. And the email that you sent to was Soul Creations. You know, I was like, what can I call it? And so, you know, now, you know, a lot of people, you know, are utilizing that tag and I love to see it. It's the soul name, right? Lao spelled backwards. And, you know, when other people were coming up with it, I've had people reach out to me like, hey, do you want to email this person? They're like using your name or, you know, using what you came up with. I was like, I don't care. Like the more exposure we can, I'm not here to hoard any knowledge or anything like that. I'm not here to like fight internally with our own people. If they use it and take it to a bigger platform, great. You know what I mean? They're shedding light on our people. And so I didn't care. But so Soul Creation is what I started. We had a team of about 20 people, five DJs, promoters, you know, everybody had a role. And so the vision with that was to, you know, show allow people in our community, there's a way, there's another way out, you know. And I remember hosting DJ classes once a month, right? Teaching them just the basics of like turntables, vinyl, how to mix, starting from the, you know, beginning of hip hop and how hip hop started and really understanding the culture before, you know, you get into even mixing and things of that nature. So that's how that started, promoting and in like, you know, graphic designs. We had a graphic design department. Just wanted to build an empire, you know, for, you know, obviously it's named Soul. So, you know, we wanted to highlight Lao people, but, you know, we weren't limited to that. I had, you know, people that weren't Lao that were helping out and being a part of the team. And so, I mean, so that was that. That's how that started. And then from that, I met a lot of other talented Lao people, you know, who didn't want to be in gangs, who didn't want to be in that life. And so, but, you know, like, you know, being that young, starting a business like that with no experience, no guidance, you know, it was bound to dissolve just because, you know, you got people with different visions and different ideas, and then money gets involved. And so definitely a learning lesson. I still keep the domain name and the website under construction just because I have a feeling one day down the line it's going to pop off again, and I can have this school where I'm just teaching, you know, hip hop and DJing and b-boying to you know, to all everybody in the community. And so, but yeah, from that, you meet people in the industry, and then that's how Cloud9 clothing happened. You know, we can segue into that, or was there anything you wanted to talk about?
No, just tell us kind of, you know, the whole pre-hike and hit stuff, what you're doing, because there's so many cool things. Cloud9 is great to talk about.
Yeah. And so Cloud9, and then, you know, it was me and DJ Lon, who ended up being my best friend. He's my best friend to this day. He would be my best man at my wedding. So it just came down to him and I. We were doing a lot of events together, you know, weddings, corporate parties, clubs, and stuff of that nature. He started DJing in this clothing store, a local clothing store. You may know it, John. Get a Clue. It's been around forever in the downtown mall next to Macy's. Yep. So they're still around, but he was DJing there, and there was this local brand called Cloud9 Clothing, and then they had these shirts that said "Trust Your Hustle," which, I mean, you know, really resonated with us, right? It's believe in yourself, believe in your dreams, and trust it. Whatever your hustle is, trust it and go for it. And so Lon was like, "Yeah, man, it's a local brand. It's really cool." He's like, "You should reach out to them, see if we can get like a sponsorship or something." And so I reach out to the owners, Sean and Daniel, and you know, they're at the infancy of the company, right? And so we started working together as sponsorships, being sponsored artists and whatnot. And then a month in, they were like, "Man, we really like the work you're putting in. You want to come in as our marketing director?" I was like, "Yeah, most definitely." So come in as their marketing director. A few months after that, they're like, "We want to make you part owner." So I was like, "Oh, let's sign the papers. Let's sign me up." So I became part owner. And we had a really, really good run. You know, we were in 36 stores across the world, a lot, all over California, from Stockton, Modesto. We're in the malls, the clothing stores in the mall, San Diego. So all over, you know, we were making clothes for like Kid Ink. We made custom pieces for Drake that we've never seen him wear in public, but we know he has it. So just, you know, touched a lot of people. We had a collaborative line with DeMarcus Cousins. That was probably our biggest collection there. But we were a team of 3.5 people, and very similarly to what happened with Soul Creations, the inexperience of building, you know, the infrastructure, right? Having people in the right place, it wasn't there, and it kind of ran its course. But you know, we have Trust Your Hustle trademark, and in the streetwear industry, you know, it comes and it goes. Like, once, you know, you have a very short window, and you know, people ask me all the time, "What does it take to start a clothing line?" I was like, "Don't start it." You know, like, it's just. It's so much work, you know. I was like, but if you are, you have to come into it with at least 200,000, right? Just to do it properly. But if you look at a lot of the streetwear companies, they're not around anymore, you know, very few, right? Echo, they're kind of around, but they've had a morph and like become a parent company to other things. You know, it's an industry that's very, very, very hard to stay involved. Fortunately for us, how we exited, was just because of our infrastructure. So the hype is still there, right? The Trust Your Hustle Cloud9 hype is still there. We constantly get asked about it. So it's on the shelf. It's not completely off the table. And so sometime down the line, we're going to bring that back, you know. And you know, it, for me, it was, again, being on a platform where other Lao people were like, "Nate owns a clothing company. Nate's working with Drake and DeMarcus Cousins. Like, we can do it, you know, like we can do it too. We have someone that's made it," type of deal. And so I just wanted to be that example. And, And I still have all those connections and all that network. And so, again, it's just one of those things I'm just adding to the light, right? Adding to that siren to call people in and like let them know like it's possible. You can get out the hood, right? That's some of the stuff pre hiking hit. But yeah, I'm still heavily involved in that. I was just with DJ Lon last night. I know you guys probably got a lot of this information from my website, natepose.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had about 20 mixtapes on a website, mixcrate.com, that got shut down. So we've been trying to find a place to put our mixes back up and create new mixes. And so we're thinking natepose.com is where we're going to host them. And last night we were just talking about different ideas and different mixtapes that we can do to kind of jumpstart this Soul Creations things. Because I know there's kids out there that, you know, still reach out to him and I, like, when are you guys going to start teaching again? We want to have a place where we can learn how to b-boy. We know you guys know a lot of dancers and stuff like that. So we were just meeting last night on how we need to jumpstart that. Get these mixtapes loaded and again, start new mixes and have other kids come in and start, you know, create their own mixes and give them a platform where people will go listen to it. So,
yeah.
Long-winded.
Yeah, no, but that's cool because you're doing a lot of stuff. And then one of the things that's really exciting to us, because we mainly focus on the athlete sports side here, mm-hmm. Is this whole hike and hit thing. I mean, tell mm-hmm. us about that, what it is, how you even came up with it.
Yeah, it's a great, great story. And so through my Cloud9 network, I had a high school friend whose brother just opened a Muay Thai gym down the street here on Norwood in Del Paso Heights. And then so he reached out to me. He's like, hey, I know you have a huge network. My brother is willing to give you free Muay Thai lessons if you help him promote, or, you know, if you can meet with him and give him some marketing tips. I was like, yeah, no problem. But instead of me getting the free lessons, can my daughter have the free lessons? He's like, yeah, most definitely. So at that time, my daughter, I think, was 13, 12, 13. And so, you know, showing up to the gym, watching my daughter work out, and she loves it. She's enjoying it. She's really good at it. And then, so I've always been a hiker, backpacker because of Paula. Paula would always take us outdoors. I was going on a hike with my daughter. And I had an open invite, invited whoever wanted to come. And one of my friends, Brett, came, and he was like, you know, going through it, breakup, dual parenting, you know what I mean? He had a son. And we were hiking one day and we got to this beautiful spot, and he was like, wouldn't it be cool if like we brought mitts out here and like we got like a workout in and hitting mitts? I was like, it would be awesome with this kind of backdrop. He's like, you know anybody that would hold mitts for us? I was like, I think my daughter's Muay Thai teacher might be interested. So I shoot him a text and he's like, I'm down. Where? So the very next week we, you know, pack all the gear. We go on this hike. We get this workout up there, hitting the mitts, you know, doing some kickboxing, some Muay Thai and some boxing. And then we were like, let's take it to another location. Let's go on the coast. Let's go here. And so we were hiking and hitting, right? Hitting the mitts. We were hiking, hitting the mitts. And we did it for an entire year, just us three, right? All these different locations. And then, you know, they were like, you think other people would want to do this? You think other people would enjoy it? I was like, I 100%. I was like, but how do you want to go about it? You want to make it like a service, or you just want to kind of do it casually? And then, you know, they were like, you know, I think we can make it a service, like, you know, make it a legit service. I was like, well, it's going to take some planning through my experiences with, you know, Soul Creations and Cloud9. Like, there's got to be some infrastructure. So me and my partner, Romo, my daughter's Muay Thai teacher, we spent 3 months planning it out, what it looks like, all the logistics of it. Right. And so 3 months in, then we hosted a pilot event, and everyone there, it was a hard hike. It was 9.5 miles, and people at the end were still like, we're down to work out. We're down to get some, you know, some stretching. I was like, wow. Even after the hike, they're like, yeah, 95% of the people participated in the workout that day. And so we're like, cool, this is legit. Let's launch it. We already had the entire year of 2019 planned out, one event a month. All at a different location. Everything was planned out. We would recon each hike, so we would have so we would know what it was, what to expect, where we would stop and work out, what kind of workouts we were gonna do, and made sure, you know, it was safe, and things of that nature. How parking situation, and we so each month we'd be like, okay, so, you know, this is fun for us. We created events. Each event was an event that we'd say to ourselves, would this be something we would want to do ourselves? Yes, it is. Okay, cool. Let's create an event around it. So it would never feel like work, right? It would never feel like we were doing it just to get more people to come out. if no one showed up, we still wanted to do it, you know? And so, so we're like, okay, let's make sure it's top tier, right? Let's make sure we provide the snacks, you know, high quality snacks, healthy, provide, you know, food that's nutritious, you know, that's filling, that's homemade, that's organic and things of that nature. So we brought my cousin on, you know, got her logo, and she would curate the meals for each hike. We made sure we had a top media team, so they would have photos and a recap video. We understood the importance of that because, you know, in a social media driven world, you know, there's multiple ways that can affect someone. They want to do it selfishly because they want to look good that on them, mm-hmm. or it could inspire and motivate others to get out, you know, and be active, however it may be. Because all of our workouts were, you know, voluntary, you know, you didn't have to work out. You can just come enjoy the hike. And so we really wanted to stress that. We have three guides, a lead, a mid, and an anchor, so that no one ever gets left behind. You can hike your own pace, hike your own hike. And we were very vocal about that. You go at your own pace. Like, look, we're not here. It's not a sprint, you know. And if you want to go fast, we have our lead guy leading. Go for it, you know. And so that's just kind of how that came about. And it's morphed. The pandemic has definitely caused it to morph. But that was the idea of it. And each month we were doing it for ourselves. So we would accept donations because it did cost. And then anything after cost, we would donate to whichever charity we designated that month, from Weave, you know, women being abused, to teen volunteer, teen challenge, you know, to local friends and family that are suffering from a loss due to cancer or things of that nature. So every month it was a different cause. And so that was the basis of it. It was more so for just us to get out and explore. And so, yeah, we had big plans for 2020. I think like a lot of people did. But yeah, so that was that chapter. You know, if you have any questions, I want to recap that before we go into where it's morphed into now.
No, I think we'd love to hear where you're taking it, what it's morphed into. Nate, so just continue us on this hike and hit journey.
Yeah, so we at our core, we still love to travel, we still love to get out, but we also understood that there's an actual need for it, right? From a, like a corporate standpoint, right? Like team building, if Wells Fargo or some other major company wanted to take their team out on a team building, we understood there's an industry for that, team building and things of that nature. So we started looking into that. We're like, okay. And then Romo, who was my daughter's Muay Thai teacher, was also coaching football at the time, coaching football, coaching track, and coaching basketball. He's like, man, we think we can tap into the school districts and get some of the kids out. I was like, yeah, most definitely. And so the work started, we started putting in the work to, you know, get the correct forms and consents and all the logistical stuff that comes with that, insurance. And so literally the month before the pandemic hit, we met with one of the school districts and they were like, we're on, we'll take the school buses. We'll transport and we'll get chartered out to this event. We'll provide lunches for the kids. You guys do your thing. And so we were like, oh, it's, you know, and you have, you know, there's a balance, right? So like, you have to understand, like, you also have to know your worth. So like there's a huge budget in the schooling systems, for things like this, right? There's a huge need. And so for us, it was an opportunity for us, hey, could we potentially make this full time and just do this and also bless our people in terms of like hire outside contractors to come and for food, for video, for photos, extra instructor, extra guys, like we can really bless some of our people here. So that was the plan. And the pandemic kind of slowed that all down, which gave us time to really tighten up some stuff, right? You know, whether it be some of our proposals and our budgets and those type of things. And so now coming back out of it, you know, the 2 years out, Romo, he's been pressing me. He's like, hey, I really want you to help me coach football. So I was like, I'm in this year. I'm in. And so we would coach football. We'd get done with practice. Then we'd meet about hiking hit. And so it was a win-win because I love football. He loves football. We love coaching. We love teaching. We love inspiring. And then we would meet about hiking hit. But then it also allowed me to build relationships with the kids, right? And with the athletes and in the schools. And so now there's even more draw and more pull when we want to do this event. They're like, oh, Coach Nate and Coach Romo hosting a hiking hit. And we're there. Like, we're going. So we can use them as a pilot to showcase to these other school districts, like, look, this is how you can impact your kids and things of that nature. So lots of moving parts. We've met with two different school districts, a lot of different departments, right? There's before school programs, after school programs, during school programs, at-risk kids programs. There's all these programs that have their own budgets that require different verbiage, different proposals. And so that's what we're working on right now, just getting all of our documents in line to match, you know, all these kids, whether it be, I have the notes somewhere, but there's all these different key buzzwords that they want to hear. And each department is different, has different needs. And so we're just working on all the logistics. Right now, schools are short drivers, so we're having to outsource, drivers and transportation and just all these things. And so once we get this all lined up, our first big event is going to be our football team. We're going to take our football team out. They have the proposal. They have the numbers. They have the insurance. It's just waiting for the green light. Once we get that green lighted, we'll have this huge project, an example, right, to provide and an experience under our belt of how working with kids in high schools will work. And so that's where it's at. I forecast that by March, it'll probably be our full time job. Where we're just coaching and then, you know, taking people out on hikes. And it's not just a hike. It's a knowledgeable hike. Like, we have not only myself, but I have another partner that knows the area really well. So we'll stop, learn history about the area, you know, learn what tribal land this was prior to what it is, you know, what it is. And so, you know, there's a lot of knowledge, about the actual hike itself, on top of the team building activities, on top of the food and stuff like that, and top of the media, right? Like, you're going to get really cool videos, really good photos that you can share with your friends and family. And so that's where it's at, and it's going full steam right now. And by March here, we're going to take it all across the country.
Yeah. So if somebody wanted to join one of those hikes, what would they do? I know the school ones are for schools, but the other ones.
Yeah, the other ones, we've had to back off on those, uh-huh. Right? Because we want to put a lot of our focus into this. So we kind of hosted one a couple of weeks ago with proceeds going to Legacies of War, and so it was just kind of, we sat around, hey, let's just do one, because we needed to get out on a hike. It was like, what hike do we want to do? We want to do this one. Okay, can we make an event around it? So same process applies. So we made an event around it, and then, you know, we post it. We're having an Eventbrite where people can sign up, and there's a waiver form they can sign. And if they can't make it, there's a donation button. They can donate directly to the cause, which was, you know, Legacies of War. So we don't have any upcoming plan because we're so focused on this school stuff. But we don't want to lose sight of, you know, how it became about. And so we understand the importance of continuing to host those type of events where anybody and everybody can show up. And so, and it's winter and it's cold for us. Yeah. So it's hard trying to organize an event with weather pending, you know, so, we don't foresee one probably until March. So.
What's the average duration of, like, let's say you take out the school, the football team, how long is the duration from when you get to your location and when you finish?
Yeah. So for those type of events, there's an area here, outside of Sacramento called Auburn State Recreational Area. It's about a 40-minute drive from the inner city. And it's a huge area with tons of trails, tons of different types of trails, but there's one specifically we like. It's only a 3-mile round trip trail. Yeah. So, I have an entire complete itinerary I can send you guys, so you guys can see what the day looks
like. That'd be cool.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's the main one we would use, just because it kind of incorporates a lot. It's a huge wide trail. There's an uphill part that's very challenging. We go through this part called the quarry, huge, massive rocks, looks like Jurassic Park, and people are actually there climbing. So we stop there, we watch the climbers, you know, and then we just kind of talk about, you know, that sport and that activity and how it came about. And then there's one last stretch, like 0.25 miles. That's pretty intense up to like this platform where you kind of oversee the whole area. That's where we typically do the workout, meditation, whatever it is. And the rest is just kind of downhill, back to the car. So that's our main spot where we would take different kids. And then, you know, we'll create advanced programs to different trails and whatnot. So that's our program. But the ones where we do that we like, it varies. Like, it's depend, like, again, like, we say, hey, this month we want to do something hard and challenging. we'll pick a spot. Then we'll say, okay, we'll create an event around it. Let's make sure we communicate that, hey, it's really challenging. Be prepared. If not, these are the things that we'll have for you, but you should still always be prepared. And so, you know, we'll have events where we only have like 10 people because of the, how challenging it is, you know? But again, the core of it is that it's something that we want to do so that it's not, it doesn't feel like work. Like we're putting on, like we have to put on an event for people, you know? And so it's like, this is what we would do on a Saturday anyways. And so we just have the resources to create an event around it to allow people to come out. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to check out that Auburn area because my mom moved to to Rockland about a year ago. So she's just like 20 minutes from there, probably. That's pretty cool.
Oh, when you come out here, please hit me up. I will. We will give you a personal hiking hit.
Yeah, I'll join one if I can, man. That would be awesome. Well, that's really cool to hear about that. Going back to the whole kind of full circle here, you went back to Laos specifically for your father's ashes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just tell us, because this is something like my wife will be back in Laos for the first time in May, and she left as a very young child, too young to remember. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that. What was it like to go back and honor your father in that way?
Amazing. One of the greatest experiences of my life, for sure. It definitely ignited certain fires in me that I didn't know I had, right? And so, with that desire and that love to want to help the community here in the States, it's times 10 back there when you see the family village back there and what they're going through and what they, well, you know, the challenges that they still have to this day, you know? And so, calm myself down a little bit. Cause you know, you have that intense drive, like I need to do something right now. I need to help right now. Yeah. And it's like, you know, baby steps, you know, one thing at a time. It was just great just to be a light, right? Like, wow, he's over there. Nate's, you know, in the States coming back. He's doing this. He's doing that. He's coming back, helping us here and just hanging out and having fun. Like, you know, it opened up, you know, it's probably allowing them to dream bigger than they thought they could dream, you know? And so just to kind of be funny about it. So like, you know, I'm 5'9", you know, which is not that tall average here, but back there, you know, like, wow, this guy's tall. And then I have a full beard. They're like, wow, are you even Lao? And then I speak the language pretty fluently. And they're like, so it was just really, really weird for them to adjust to. But it was fun. I had a lot of fun playing, you know, cops and robbers, playing tag, chasing the kids around. I don't know if they understand the full grasp of what it is I'm trying to do over here. So I didn't try to, overbearing with the things that I was doing here. I just try to be as mindful and present with them and just enjoy that their time there and ask about them and learn about what their day-to-day life and whatever it is that they did, I did with them and enjoyed it and, you know, added new wrinkles to it, using my creativity and stuff like that. So I tried to stay out of the whole comparison thing, but back in the States, this is what we do. It's like, no, I'm here with you guys. We're gonna do what you do. We'll add some wrinkles to it and have fun. I want to live how you guys live, so I get a full understanding of it, and just bring the positive, fun energy and just joke and stuff like that. And so, definitely some dreams in the back of my mind of, you know, once things get really stable here, I want to go back and be able to incorporate and do. One of my driving forces is, you know, find some land out there. And I know there's a lot of politics around it, but, you know, I'm willing to do the work, but find some land where we can farm coffee. I know, you know, you have to be at a certain mountain range. So that's the plan. Laos lies in the coffee belt. I was a coffee master for Starbucks for 14 years. So my knowledge of coffee is pretty decent. So I want to go back and get some land and provide jobs for family members and whatnot. So that's a dream. Like most Lao families, we send money back so they can, you know, build a better home, build better facilities and stuff like that. And so that's what we're chipping away at until, you know, we can go back more. And each time we go back, so we're planning to go back again this year. Wanted to make it an annual thing. It was supposed to be an annual thing. Had to cancel our tickets, of course, because of COVID. Want to make it an annual thing. And we have plenty of real estate there to where we can bring a bunch of friends. And so I think this next trip, a good amount of friends are coming, you know, so they can see and they can be inspired and they can learn the culture. So I got a media team come in, just a bunch of really, really motivated individuals that want to give back, that want to help, that have a lot of resources. So I just want to show them, you know, my family and the village and how they live and how they grow up. And again, just hoping to continue to build different platforms, build out this platform and inspire others to really get to know our story. And so, amazing experience. Again, I'm going to go back every year that they allow me to go back and bring whoever wants to come so they can be, you know, immersed in our culture.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I mean, this is some great stuff, Nate. Before we kind of close out, Co, any other questions here?
No, like you said, this is great. Hey, Nate, I'll be honest. When John got in touch with me and like, hey, we got this hiker, and I'm like, this, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm sorry, bro.
But you, same, man.
I just wasn't like a hiker, you know. And I was like, okay, but then he sent me your link to your website, and I read that. I was like, this guy's pretty cool. And then now hearing it. You've blown my mind, man. You've blown my mind with like your visions and what you want to do, you know, for our country. I mean, it's still, in a way, it is our country. You know, it mm-hmm. is our homeland. It is our people. Mm-hmm. I think people get too caught up in the political side and get into that. And I don't want to be a part of that. But, man, like, no, you've blown my mind, brother. I love it. I love hearing this.
Man, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, like, it's the political side, it's anywhere you go, right? Here in the States, you know, caught up in the political side. Back there, political side. It's just like, you know, I just want to act from a place from love. You know, like, if love channels me to go that way, to do things that way, as long as it doesn't interfere with my inner peace, I'm for it. I'll do it. But if once it starts to interfere with my inner peace, I can't be the best me. If I can't be the best me, I'm not impacting the people that I want to impact, you know? So the best me is happy, right? The best me is positive. The best me is optimistic. If I start getting involved in something that messes with that, you know, I have to recalibrate and question if this is the right platform to be on, the right thing to be doing. And so, you know, all the politics aside, just being in the village, just again, ripple effects. If I can inspire one kid in that village to, like, you know, I'm going to move to Thailand, get a job, or get an education because of Nate, then I've done my job. You know what I mean? So, you know, and that's just as big as the big picture. You know what I mean? And so, cause that one, I'm sure we all listen to Tupac, you know, Tupac had that one line, you know, if I can inspire one person to make a difference, then I've done my job. And that's kind of all I want to do, one person at a time. And the best way to do that is be present, right? Wherever I'm at, be present and not be too cloudy with all the other stuff that's going on, big picture, politics, all that. It's just like, I'm here with you. You got my time. You got my undivided attention right now. And that's all that matters. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, so much, there's more and more cooperation between Laos and people in the U.S. We love it. We're bringing a contingent of athletes over there that kind of all came together through the Hall of Fame that we launched in May. It's going to be just a lot of cool stuff going on. But as we close, hey, you've done a lot of cool things. You were 17-year-old Nate, kind of on the cusp of directions in your life. What advice would you have for somebody who really doesn't know where to go with their life, wants to do something positive like you?
Man, that's a great question. And I want to resort back to the whole Cloud 9 saying, trust your hustle, right? Like, I think innately when we're born, we all have good in us. We all have good intentions. We all have love. And it's just, you know, take some time to reflect and find out what it is you love and trust that, you know, what it is you love most, whether it be your family, whether it be traveling, whether it be, you know, helping others, whether, you know, if you want to chase the bag, you know, if you do it in a positive manner, whatever it is that you love, just trust it. Just trust it. Just go back to your core, the core values you were born with, and let that lead the way. And because you know, it can get cloudy out there. And so, at that crossroad, just, you know, take a deep breath, close your eyes, meditate, and find out what it is that you love truly, and just trust it.
That's good. So, where can people follow you on social media, Nate? Keep up with this journey.
Nate in the clouds.
All right. All Nate in the clouds on IG. Guys, everybody follow Nate. He's got a lot of cool stuff coming. Hey, so that's a wrap on this episode of the C4 podcast. This is going to be our last episode of 2022. We kicked off, our first episode was launched January 31st of this year. So we're 1 year in. Co's going to head back to the motherland here for a few weeks, and I'll be busy with holidays, so we'll launch the next episode in January. We wanted to thank everybody who listened. We've exceeded 10,000 downloads, which we didn't know what to expect. So thank you everybody who either subscribed or listened or supported us along the way with the podcast and also with the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. So with that, we're going to close out this episode. Thanks, everybody.
Wait, can I guess say one more thing?
Yeah.
Nate, you got to show us the Nate pose and give us a little background on it. That's got to be like long. Can you just show me? I want to learn the Nate pose, man. I want to finish my workout. I'm going to do the Nate pose. And I want to hear the meaning behind it.
Yeah, Nate pose came from a hike. We hiked up to this spot that was really, really challenging. My friend Sarah, who passed away, you know, rest in peace. She's like, Nate, give me a pose. I want to take a photo. I was like, I'm so tired, Sarah. I don't know if I can do anything. She's like, just give me something. So I was like, all right. I just let out a scream and flex and was like, we made it. And then she posted it. She's like, you should call that the Nate pose. Every time you climb a mountain, you should do that. And then, you know, the mountain.
Is your arms down and palms facing forward?
Yeah, so you're out flexed. You're just like, you're just kind of all right. Like Super Saiyan type deal. And so,
Okay.
So you do that in the gym, Co.
Yeah.
When I finish my workout, as I'm walking out of the gym, or as I go into the gym, you know, just hit it, just let out the screen.
After your pre-workout.
Oh, jeez.
So yeah, mountains can be literal, mountains can be figurative. You know, whatever mountain you climb, when you get to the top, just flex, just let it out. Like you climbed it, you accomplished something.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
The C4 Podcast is brought to you by the Lao American Sports Hall of Fame. Visit us on the web at laoamericansports.com, celebrating the first, inspiring the next.